Hello and welcome to The Debate. I'm Kavitat Wei. Everything was going U.S.'s way when it came to North Korea. The U.S. president was basking in joy that North Korea was going to denuclearize, a move in which President Donald Trump was taking almost all the credit for. But it appears that was short-lived, since the so-called summit has now hit a major roadblock. North Korea has threatened to cancel you at the U.S. summit because of U.S. moves like denuclearization and war games with South Korea. But is there more to the story? Well, first, let's get an idea of perhaps what has happened here. Jennifer Chang, a correspondent from Seoul, joins us. Jennifer Chang, we know what the news says. Tell us the most recent developments on this. And, of course, the question is, at this point, what could ultimately be the real reason why we're seeing an about-face from North Korea?
Well, the North Koreans are very alarmed, it seems, at two major things. One is the U.S.-South Korea Air Force drills, which began on Friday. They involve about 1,000 planes, and initially reports said that they would include B-52s. Those are nuclear bombers capable of nuking North Korea. Now the U.S. is saying it's not going to send the B-52s at all. But still, there are F-22 stealth Raptor jets, which can evade North Korean radar and carry out precision strikes on Kim Jong-un, the North Korean leader, and his lieutenants, for instance. So it's very upsetting to North Korea, that kind of technology. They feel very threatened, especially since the U.S. President Donald Trump has said he will pursue maximum pressure, as you said, if these summit talks that are supposed to come up on June 12th in Singapore do not work out, if they do not result in an acceptable compromise between North Korea and the U.S. on the denuclearization issue. And no one really knows whether Trump would indeed dare attack North Korea, because North Korea would then counterattack, and this would lead to a cataclysmic war with millions of casualties and deaths. So only Trump knows whether he would do this. And North Korea has no way of knowing whether he would actually do this. Maybe Trump doesn't even know himself at this point whether, as a final resort, he would actually conduct a preemptive attack on North Korea. But the North Koreans are alarmed, and they're alarmed by Trump's national security advisor, John Bolton, who is demanding that North Korea undergo a Libya-style denuclearization plan. Libya was forced to send samples of its nuclear components to the U.S., and it also they had to allow British and U.S. inspectors in. And North Korea already said 10 years ago it's not going to allow that. So everything is very sinister to them.
Okay, Jennifer Chang, thank you very much for that. That was a correspondent, Jennifer Chang from Seoul. Let's bring in our guests for this edition of The Debate. We have Daniel Server, professor at Johns Hopkins University, who joins us from Washington, D.C., and also editor-in-chief at the Duran.com, Alexander Mercurius, who joins us from London. Gentlemen, welcome. Well, Daniel Server, I'm going to start with you. I don't know if you heard what our correspondent there said as the two main reasons, which is pretty much what the news is indicating, for North Korea to do an about-face. Do you think that there's more to this story when we're seeing the stance change in a somewhat dramatic fashion at this point?
I think the main complaint of the North Koreans was about Bolton, not about the military exercises, which they've in the past indicated would not be a problem. I think the Bolton remark about the Libya model was taken very badly in North Korea, not because of the inspections that were part of the Libya model, but because of what happened to Gaddafi after he had abandoned his nuclear program. That said, I think the North Koreans have made very clear in their statement that the kind of complete nuclearization that has been the denuclearization that has been the American goal in the past is not what the North Koreans have in mind. Now, exactly what they have in mind in accepting this summit isn't very clear, nor is it clear exactly what the Americans will settle for. So there's lots of room for negotiation, but I think both parties are going to have to come off their maximum demands.
Well, what do you think, Alexander Mercuris? Are we looking at a deadly combination of Bolton B-52 bombers, which then was excluded, type reaction from the North Korean leader, or maybe something else? What do you think?
I think the fundamental problem here is that both North Korea and the United States imagined when they agreed these talks that they were each negotiating from a position of strength and had put the other in a position where they were forced to negotiate. The United States thought that it forced North Korea to negotiate by imposing sanctions upon it. North Korea thinks it's forced the United States to negotiate by developing its ballistic missile and nuclear weapons program. About a week ago, the North Koreans warned the US that it is miscalculating if it thinks that it is sanctions which have brought North Korea to the negotiating table. Now we have seen the North Koreans annoyed by these comments of John Bolton, and I agree, I think it is more the Bolton comments than the exercises that have really incensed them. Now the North Koreans are infuriated by that, and they have fired this further warning shot across the United States, basically saying to the United States, if you continue on this trajectory, if you continue to think that we have been forced into these negotiations and are prepared to do only what you want us to do, which is give up all our nuclear weapons and do so in this humiliating way that Libya followed, it isn't going to happen, and there's no point in negotiating at all. I think the United States will understand this. I think we already see some indications that the United States is starting to back off. And I think that there will be an attempt to put the summit back on track. That is what I think. But I think the North Koreans are making their concerns very clear, and they're signaling to the United States that the United States cannot simply imagine that the North Koreans will agree to whatever it is the United States demands of them.
Well, we're looking at May 16th here, and I'm looking at a timeline. If I can ask you, Daniel Server, where the U.S. came out April 30th, various officials, including the Treasury Secretary, Steve Mnuchin, saying that there's no question that Trump sanctions got North Korea to negotiate. This coming from CNBC. A week later, North Korea, we saw the first signs of what I think is happening, what has happened now. North Korea denying that it was the U.S. pressure that brought it to the negotiating table ahead of the summit with Donald Trump. And of course, now the news saying that North Korea is saying that it feels like it was been kind of forced into a corner regarding this nuclear disarmament. Do you think, therefore, that North Korea is reacting to the U.S. posturing, being it forceful, and for that to also play a part in what has happened today?
Sure. The North Koreans are reacting in part to Bolton's posturing in particular. But look, let's face it, the sanctions, which are not just U.S. sanctions, but in this case are true multilateral sanctions supported by China, Russia, and Europe, the sanctions are having an effect on North Korea. But it's also true that North Korea already has nuclear weapons and already has intercontinental ballistic missiles, so whether it can marry the two effectively is not yet clear. So I think all of the above has contributed to people wanting to come to the table. But they want to come to the table with objectives that so far at least don't appear to overlap. In the conflict management business, we call this the zone of possible agreement, ZOPA. And there doesn't appear to be a zone of possible agreement yet in this case, but I don't think you can tell of the actual talks. Will the talks occur? I don't know, but I do think that Kim Jong-un has a big incentive to come to the talks because they provide a kind of international and domestic legitimacy that he lacks otherwise. So I do think that President Trump agreeing to these talks was a big prize, a big get for the North Koreans. And I'm going to be a little bit surprised if the North Koreans walk away from the talks.
Both of you have said that, and Alexander McCurse, you said that eventually this is going to happen, that they're going to come back to the talks. What makes you think that they are going to come back to the talks, given the developments here? If you can expand.
I think the reason that they're going to have to come back to the talks is because the United States has an incentive to talk to North Korea. I want to take issue with this point about legitimacy and about, for Kim Jong-un, this being all about legitimacy. I don't think that's part of North Korea's calculation at all. I think what the North Koreans are looking for is a security treaty which will guarantee North Korea's security and protection from a potential attack by the United States. I think this is what the North Korean game plan has been all along. I think they feel that they've now negotiated with the South Koreans and the Chinese a point of understanding of the North Korean position. And I think what they feel is that they're in a very strong position now to make the United States understand that as well. And I think that they will say to the United States, and they are saying it through these signals, that it is the United States which must ultimately negotiate with them if this international consensus, which has been built up and which my colleague was talking about, is going to be maintained. I think the United States at some level understands that, and that is why the negotiation is going to happen. Because there are points of disagreement, obviously, I think the United States does understand that it has to take South Korean and Chinese concerns into account if it is going to preserve a united position on the North Korean issue.
Well, I mean, I still don't understand Daniel Server and also Alexander McCurse, both of you thinking that they're going to come back to the negotiating table. Daniel Server, I'm going to come up with five letters. JCPOA. The U.S. pulled out of that. Is that not going to have a bearing when it comes to North Korea and the way they view what the U.S. did with that deal?
Oh, yes, I do think that the withdrawal from the JCPOA casts a big shadow over the negotiations with North Korea. I agree that the North Koreans want some guarantee of security from the United States. The problem I see there is that I don't see what they would be well advised to trust at this point, partly because of the withdrawal from the JCPOA, partly because Trump is extraordinarily erratic. So what kind of guarantee could the United States give? Well, I suppose it could give a guarantee of a sort by removing its troops from South Korea. That's not a guarantee, but it is an indication that we won't go after North Korea. But of course, there aren't enough troops in South Korea to ever invade the North. I mean, that's not a serious proposition. They're there mainly as a tripwire. Should they come under fire, it guarantees that the Americans will come to the aid of the South Koreans. So I just don't see what kind of security guarantee the North Koreans will be seeking. And I do believe that legitimacy is a big problem for Kim Jong-un. He has no domestic legitimacy except his descent from his father and grandfather. And he has very little international legitimacy.
So, Alexander McCurse, if the U.S. cannot give that security guarantee that perhaps Kim Jong-un is looking for, maybe the art of the deal is going on behind the scenes with a country we haven't mentioned, China. How do you see China and its role in these negotiations or in the posturing that's taking place?
Well, I think that's absolutely right, because bear in mind, there have already been two summit meetings between Kim Jong-un and the Chinese leader Xi Jinping, and we must never forget the huge role that China has in this matter. Now, can I come back to something I said before? I think there is likely to be a summit meeting between Kim Jong-un and Donald Trump. I'm not so confident that there's going to be an agreement between the United States and North Korea. As to what North Korea is looking for, when I talk about security guarantees, I think the North Koreans envisage a security treaty, including a peace treaty between North and South Korea, of which China and the United States, but especially China, will be the co-guarantor. As part of that treaty, I think they're looking for the total withdrawal of United States forces, including nuclear forces, from South Korea. That, I think, is the ultimate North Korean objective. I think the Chinese are fully signed up to that. I think they would be very willing to go along with it. I'm not sure the United States is. If the United States is not, then the North Koreans will certainly look to China for those guarantees. The Chinese have already indicated that they are probably likely to provide those guarantees. There were statements to that effect from China last August, and there is already, of course, a mutual defense treaty between China and North Korea, which the Chinese have made clear is still in effect. I think the North Koreans will also be looking for security guarantees of a lesser sort from South Korea too, and I think the South Koreans might be willing to agree to those as well. So that is why I think the negotiations will probably happen, because for the United States, there is a real risk that this thing will go ahead without them if they put too many obstacles in it. But if there's no guarantee of an agreement between North Korea and the United States, and North Korea has alternative diplomatic options with China and South Korea if the United States does not play with them in a straight way.
Well, another surprise coming from the developments here, Daniel Server, was what North Korea has said in the offer that the U.S. Secretary of State Michael Pompeo gave in terms of economic aid were the North to denuclearize. And I'm going to quote here the spokesman of the North Korean ministry saying, "We have never had any expectation of U.S. support in carrying out our economic construction and will not at all make such a deal in the future." Is that a bit odd, or what's your interpretation of what North Korea has said regarding the, I guess, the economic aid from the U.S. and the rejection that they have made of that?
I take the North Koreans at their word. I don't think it's odd. Countries that want nuclear weapons can't be dissuaded from it by economic means. I mean, DPRK in North Korea is one of the poorest countries in the world. It's invested vast resources in developing nuclear weapons and intercontinental ballistic missiles. I don't think they can be bought off at all. I think it was very foolish of Pompeo to suggest that. I'm not surprised at the North Korean reaction. I want to underline one point, though, that's important, that the Americans removed their nuclear weapons from South Korea some time ago. There are none left. The Americans don't need nuclear weapons in South Korea to be able to use nuclear weapons any place in the world, including against North Korea, and the North Koreans understand that perfectly well. What they want is the U.S. troops out so they won't be a tripwire that brings the United States back in to oppose any kind of military action by the North against the South. I find that difficult to imagine, that the United States is going to agree to withdraw its troops, but it's quite clear from leaks from the Trump administration that the option is being discussed in the Defense Department.
It's very interesting that when we talked about China, that I didn't hear anything in regards to what is happening in the South China Sea and the tensions, Alexander Mercuris, mm-hmm. that exist there because of the U.S. presence and their offensive moves there. I'm going to ask you if you think that China is using the presence of the U.S., the U.S. is not backing off from that offensive posturing in order to have an influence on the way that North Korea is posturing in these upcoming talks or their demands. Do you think that plays a factor?
Well, I think for the Chinese, they're coming increasingly to see the United States as an adversary. And I think you're absolutely right, by the way, to bring up the South China Sea, just as you were absolutely right to bring up the JCPOA. The United States has this view that it can put pressure on countries and at the same time get their cooperation. I don't think the Chinese play that way at all. And I think as they look at the situation in the Korean Peninsula, they are not there to help the United States. They are there to secure their own interests, which means that they want to see a reconciliation between South Korea and North Korea, which will benefit China. If we come back to the JCPOA and to the economic desires of the North Koreans, there has to be an understanding that when the United States walks away from agreements like the one it did with Iran, people around the world look at that and they say, can we trust the United States? And they say to themselves, probably not, because clearly one treaty which one president makes, another president can easily unmake. So what the North Koreans and the Chinese will be looking for in the Korean Peninsula is a secure international agreement which will involve outside powers, not just the United States and North Korea, but also South Korea and China, which will endure beyond any United States president. And the North Koreans will not want the United States inside North Korea interfering there, and the Chinese will not make concessions to the United States over the Korean issue, which cut across Chinese interests, and they will vigorously promote their own interests in the South China Sea, which, to be absolutely clear, is a vital national interest to China.
Very well, we're going to have to end it there. Thank you very much for that. Alexander Mercuris, editor-in-chief of the Duran.com. Also, thank you, Daniel Server, professor at the Johns Hopkins University. And on top of the hour, we had Jennifer Chang, our correspondent from Seoul. Thanks so much for tuning in to another edition of The Debate. From Mikhail Vitali, the entire team at the capital, Tehran, it's goodbye.